This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, hosting comparative coffee and tea tastings all month at Pete's 7 Portland locations, including new locations on Hawthorne and in Vancouver. Details at PEETS.com.
Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Wednesday, November 15th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Martha Odom. Coming up on this morning's news, open enrollment for prescription drug coverage begins today.
Dick Cheney and Louis Libby have filed motions in court to have a civil suit against them by outed CIA operative Valerie Plame dropped.
And the Senate is planning to investigate the CIA's secret rendition program. Weather for Portland area today calls for rain with temperatures in the mid-50s.
Open enrollment for prescription drug coverage under Medicare begins today and ends December 31st. People may enroll in a new prescription plan, cancel enrollment from their previous plan, or switch to a different plan from the one they chose during the initial enrollment period. There are among 57 plans for prescription drug coverage, 33 of which have no deductible requirement. But most plans do require recipients to share the cost of medications they order, and most also have monthly premiums. Extra help in the form of low-income subsidies is available through the Social Security Administration for individuals who receive less than $14,700 annually or a couple with less than $19,800 annually. Help choosing plans is available from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is a federal agency that oversees Medicare, or from Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance, which is a group of trained volunteers in Oregon offering free counseling tailored by zip code. They operate under the Department of Consumer and Business Services. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
In Eugene, police officers killed a young man yesterday that the family says suffers from mental illness and threatened to stab them. Eugene police said they responded to a call from a woman who said her son threatened to stab her and her husband. The young man was breaking glass and damaging the home. After three officers arrived about 3 a.m., the young man came out of the house with a knife and the deadly confrontation began. A press release said officers used less lethal force and then lethal force as he continued to be an immediate threat. A police spokeswoman said the youth died in a shooting, but an autopsy would be performed to pinpoint the cause of death.
About 25 people gathered on the sidewalk outside the Wyatt Federal Building yesterday. They represented several activist political groups. Arthur Stamoulis of Oregon Fair Trade Campaign believes that a number of anti-worker, anti-consumer, anti-immigrant, anti-environmental bills currently before Congress would cause serious long-term damage to this state and the country if they were passed. Jonathan Jellin of Augsburg says one of the bills he's concerned about could allow oil exploration off the Pacific coast. So far this week, the Senate has dealt with routine business and has not taken up any of the controversial bills. Senator Ron Wyden has put a hold on the nominee to be chief lawyer for the Environmental Protection Agency, Roger Martella. Wyden has also promised to filibuster the communication bill that would allow internet providers to charge different rates for certain websites. The newly elected Congress with the Democratic majority convenes January 3rd. This story is from OPB.
A Seattle environmental group has asked a federal judge to bar logging on about 50,000 acres of private timberlands in western Washington. The Seattle Audubon Society cited a prolonged and accelerating decline that has cut Washington's spotted owl population in half since the early 1990s. The Audubon Society targeted four sites owned by the Weyerhaeuser Company in southwest Washington where spotted owls have been seen. The group says these are examples of western Washington sites where the court should order the State Forest Practice Board to halt all logging. The Seattle group said state rules offer no meaningful protection for owls outside 13 special emphasis areas where the state chose to better protect the reclusive birds. A spokeswoman for the Forest Practice Board said the board tightened some rules affecting owls last year and is awaiting a new federal plan to restore owl populations. Weyerhaeuser said no owls have been seen for some time at two of the sites targeted in the suit, and the company does not plan to cut any timber at the other two sites. The suit could prove important if the plaintiffs are able to show that the state rules violate the Endangered Species Act. Owls have been declining about 7% per year in Washington, far faster than in Oregon and California. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
In Klamath Basin, farmers are going ahead with their appeal of a federal court ruling that gave more water to salmon. The move raises doubts among salmon advocates that farmers are really interested in solving the region's environmental problems. Attorneys for the Klamath Water Users Association filed a brief in their appeal of an injunction of speeding up the timetable for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation to increase Klamath River flows for threatened coho salmon. The appeal came after the Bush administration withdrew its own appeal and 4 weeks before a summit organized by the governors of Oregon and California to find solutions to the Klamath Basin's long-standing environmental problems. In 2001, irrigation water was shut off to most of the Klamath Reclamation Project to provide water for threatened coho salmon in the Klamath River during a drought. After irrigation was restored the next year, tens of thousands of adult Chinook salmon died of gill rot while stuck in low warm pools in the river. The Klamath River Summit is tentatively set for the middle of December in Klamath Falls, with representatives of the state and federal agencies, farmers, tribes, conservation groups, and fishermen. One of the top issues will be what it would take for PacifiCorps to agree to remove its four Klamath River dams, which has been the best way to be assured salmon would reach a block spawning habitat.
Oregon will not be allowed to change the way its schools are rated under the federal No Child Left Behind Act, according to a recent U.S. Department of Education decision. The state was hoping to be chosen as a pilot project to let schools be rated according to the progress each student makes, rather than the percentage of students who pass the state academic test. The pilot program is called a growth model because it measures how much knowledge students have gained. Oregon applied in February to be one of a handful of pilot states, but its proposal was turned down. The state resubmitted its proposal in the spring, and Pat Burke, chief policy officer for the Oregon Department of Education, said the state addressed all the questions the federal department had raised about the first draft. But the state is also contending with a separate federal review of its student testing system. Federal officials are concerned that the scores needed to pass the test might not wholly measure what students are supposed to learn. Every state in the growth model pilot program needs to have an up-to-date approved student testing system, so that lets out Oregon.
Under the federal No Child Left Behind law, public schools must provide military recruiters with the names, phone numbers, and addresses of their students, unless students or their parents ask otherwise. Now, more Portland students are opting to keep that information away from recruiters. District-wide, 61% of Portland's public schools, juniors, seniors, and seniors told schools to withhold their personal information. Workers and volunteers with the Military and Draft Counseling Project and Recruiter Watch Portland visited several high schools in September and distributed pamphlets that encouraged students to withhold information. Maureen Meisner, Education Service Specialist for the U.S. Army Recruiting Battalion, said recruiters report making new inroads in Portland public schools. But even if their names are not provided by the school, recruiters may still track down students.
Southern Oregon University has invoked a seldom-used provision that could lead to cuts in programs and dismissal of tenured teachers. The school's enrollment figures have been falling steadily for years, and expenses for benefits and utilities are markedly up. Soon after the start of winter term, January 8th, University President Mary Cullinan said she would decide whether to declare a condition requiring reduction or elimination of a program, prompting potential cuts. The declaration would enable Cullinan to terminate contracts with tenured or tenure-track professors. Cullinan said the actual number of Southern Oregon students this fall was up slightly, but they are taking fewer credit hours, so the university's full-time equivalents are down. That's the figure the state uses to distribute aid, and it has fallen steadily for several years.
In Washington County, officials estimated that 5,000 ballots remain to be counted. Turnout in the county was 68%, resulting in 167,000 ballots. Several glitches slowed the counting, and most important was the size of the ballot. It was 17 inches long instead of the usual 14, and the scanners balked. Because of the mistake, the county also had to send out supplemental ballots for some local council races and hand count them. It also reported a higher than normal number of voter mistakes, such as voting for both candidates in a race. The late votes were not expected to change the results, and an incorporation measure for Bull Mountain, it was failing by 52% to 48%.
A 23-year-old man from Camas, Washington, was found dead Friday morning in his room at a military medical facility near San Diego. He had been undergoing treatment and evaluation for post-traumatic stress disorder. His mother said that Marine Sergeant William Wold didn't die in Iraq, but Iraq killed him. Wold's mother reported that she never saw him sleep. He couldn't go out in public, couldn't handle crowds, couldn't stand loud noises. Sandra Wold said that his last months were being spent shuttled among drug and PTSD rehabilitation programs and that he was being evaluated for a medical discharge at the time of his death. The Marines told Wold that her son had been found dead on the floor of his room and that his death was being investigated. Officials at the Public Affairs Office in Camp Pendleton, where Wold was stationed, would say only that an investigation is underway.
Renewable resources could produce 25% of the electricity and motor vehicle fuels used in the United States by 2025 at little or no additional cost. A RAND Corporation study issued today says that renewable sources currently provide about 6% of all U.S. energy supplies. Using a computer model, RAND researchers assess the possible impact that a 25% renewable energy target for electricity and motor vehicle ground transportation could have on total national energy expenditures and on emissions of local air pollutants and carbon dioxide by the year 2025. They found that if renewable energy production costs decline by at least 20% between now and 2025, which is consistent with their recent experience, the 25% figure can be reached unless long-term oil prices fall far below the range currently projected by the Federal Energy Information Administration. RAND conducted the study at the request of the Energy Future Coalition, a nonpartisan public policy organization in Washington, D.C. This is from the Environmental News Service.
A new report shows that poor people are needlessly dying because drug companies and the governments of rich countries are blocking developing countries from getting affordable medicines. The report from Oxfam says things are worse now than when the Doha Declaration was made 5 years ago. The Doha Declaration was a groundbreaking deal to give poor countries access to cheap drugs and was signed at the World Trade Organization. Oxfam accuses the U.S. of bullying developing countries into not using the measures in the Doha Declaration and the EU of standing by and doing nothing. Doha technically allows poor countries to buy cheap copies of desperately needed drugs. The U.S. is accused of trying to prevent countries with the manufacturing capability of making and selling cheap generic versions to preserve the monopolies of the drug giants. An Indian generics firm makes most of the cheap drugs now being used by people with HIV, and they brought the price of a basic three-drug cocktail down from $10,000 a year to less than $150. The report says that since the signing of the Doha Declaration on November 14, 2001, rich countries have failed to honor their promises. Their record ranges from apathy and inaction to dogged determination to undermine the declaration's spirit and intent. The U.S., at the behest of the pharmaceutical industry, is uniquely guilty of seeking ever higher levels of intellectual property protection in developing countries.
A House Republican and Democrat are urging President Bush to name defeated Republican Representative Jim Leach to be the next U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Leach is a moderate from Iowa known for his low-key, non-political approach to issues and his opposition to the war in Iraq. John Bolton has been temporary ambassador since August of 2005, but has never been able to win confirmation because of an opposition from Democrats and some Republicans. The White House recently renominated Bolton to the post, but Senate supporters lack the votes, and it appears Bolton will have to resign when Democrats take over the Senate in January. Leach has refused to take political action committee money or run negative ads, narrowly lost to college professor Dave Loebsack in last week's election, ending a 30-year career as a House legislator. Leach does have the resume for the job. He was a Foreign Service officer at the State Department in the 1960s and served at the UN under the then-Ambassador George H.W. Bush in the 1970s. He is currently chairman of the House International Relations Subcommittee on East Asian and Pacific Affairs.
Jack Abramoff is to report to federal prison today to begin serving a nearly six-year prison sentence for a fraudulent deal to buy a fleet of casino ships in Florida. He is also awaiting sentencing for corrupting government officials and their staff members. If it were up to the Justice Department, Abramoff wouldn't be heading to prison, at least not yet. Abramoff could hold the key to a sweeping corruption case involving Congress, members of the Bush administration, and their aides. Prosecutors say that putting their star witness behind bars will impede the investigation. But a Miami federal judge refused to delay the sentence, meaning Abramoff's cooperation will have to continue from prison.
And lawyers for Vice President Dick Cheney is an indicted former Chief of Staff I. Lewis Scooter Libby, who filed motions in federal court asking a judge to dismiss a civil complaint against them. The complaint was filed by a former Ambassador Joseph Wilson and his wife, former CIA employee Valerie Plame. Cheney's attorney argued that the suit should be dismissed on various grounds, including that the vice president is entitled to qualified immunity and that Cheney is absolutely immune from suits for civil damages. In July, the Wilsons filed a civil suit against the vice president, Karl Rove, and Libby, who is currently awaiting trial on a separate criminal charges of perjury and obstruction. They then added former State Department official Richard Armitage. Armitage has admitted to disclosing Plame's name inadvertently to Robert Novak. The court filings accused Cheney, Rove, and Libby leaked Plame's CIA status to reporters to punish Wilson for criticizing the Bush administration's use of pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald has spent nearly 3 years investigating who revealed Plame's identity to Novak in 2003, but nobody was ever charged with the leak. This from MSNBC.
George Bush was less than keen to go to Vietnam as a young man, but after his midterm thumping, George Bush may welcome the chance to hole up in Hanoi at this Friday's 21-nation Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, also referred to as APEC. Escape from the States or not, Bush's attendance in Hanoi is necessitated by ongoing efforts to maintain U.S. influence in a region increasingly dominated by China. Critics say APEC is being outstripped by rival organizations. Next month, the Philippines will host the latest East Asia Summit, a new Beijing-backed group that excludes Washington. APEC is supposed to promote free trade and investment. Its communique is expected to urge a last-chance rescue of the World Trade Organization, stalled Doha round of liberalization measures. It will also raise the prospect of an APEC-wide free trade zone. Much of the summit's unofficial work will take place offstage. Bush and his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, are finally expected to shake hands on Russian membership in the WTO, long delayed by U.S. objections. That could help ease bilateral friction over Moscow's energy policies and its democratic deficit. Bush, in turn, will again press Putin to back U.N. sanctions on Iran's nuclear program. Russia halted discussions on a punitive resolution last week, prompting the U.S. Ambassador John Bolton to accuse Moscow of reneging on earlier undertakings.
And abuses carried out under the CIA's secret program of extraordinary rendition are to be investigated by one of the Senate's most powerful committees. The new chairman of the Senate Armed Service Committee, the Democratic Senator Carl Levin, revealed that he was not comfortable with the rendition system and said it was making the U.S. less secure. The extrajudicial program has seen untried criminal suspects rounded up by CIA operatives in more than a dozen countries and sent to third world states for interrogation. Some captives have allegedly been snatched off the streets and suffered torture in detention. Asked whether he would investigate the renditions program, including the secret prisons and missing detainees, Levin replied an enthusiastic yes. According to a Council of Europe report earlier this year, 14 European countries, including Britain, have allowed extraordinary rendition flights to travel through their airspace. Amnesty International has described extraordinary rendition as a policy of disappearances and welcomed Levin's announcement.
Tony Blair yesterday urged the U.S. to re-engage the Israeli-Palestine peace process in order to help the situation in Iraq and the wider Middle East. Giving evidence to the independent and influential Iraq Survey Group, which will advise President Bush on potential exit strategies from the Iraqi occupation, the Prime Minister repeatedly said that solving the conflict would reduce the opposition of other Muslim states in the region, according to his spokesman. In his final conference speech as Prime Minister last month, Blair promised a labor audience that he would devote the rest of his time in office to seeking a resolution to the Palestinian problem with the same effort that he put into the Northern Ireland peace process. Blair intends to visit the region again before the end of the year, adding that there was a realistic chance of progress. He said that finding a solution to the Middle East conflict would increase pressure on Iran and Syria to cooperate more widely. He insisted that the West should not back down in its demands to the two states, but should aim to take away issues that stirred up moderate Muslim feeling.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said yesterday that Iran would talk to the United States if it corrects its behavior, but the White House said there would be no discussion until Tehran took a more constructive role in the region. Ahmadinejad's comment was the highest-level Iranian statement in recent months that the government is willing to talk to Washington. It also came a day after British Prime Minister Tony Blair advocated seeking Tehran's help in ending the violence in Iraq. At a news conference, Ahmadinejad did not spell out any other conditions for U.S.-Iranian talks, but he accused the Bush administration of pursuing a foreign policy based on aggression, oppression, unilateralism, and disrespect for other nations.
Hezbollah leaders said the militant group would continue efforts to replace the Lebanese government, saying the Western-backed cabinet had lost all credibility after six ministers resigned. Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, who has threatened to stage street demonstrations if Hezbollah's demand for a national unity government was ignored, also assured the Lebanese that there would be no new civil war as a result of mounting political tensions among the country's rival factions. Nasrallah's remarks came a day after the government, defying the objections of the president and the resignation of six ministers, approved a UN plan for an international tribunal to try the suspected killers of former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. The vote dealt a blow to Hezbollah and its Shiite ally, the Amal movement. The two parties withdrew their five representatives from the government Saturday after unsuccessfully demanding that Hezbollah and its allies be given effective veto power over key decisions. A sixth minister who is Christian and allied with the president resigned on Monday. Nasrallah has said that Prime Minister Fuad Saniora's government is unable to rebuild the country from the devastation caused by the Israeli attack in Beirut's southern suburbs and in eastern and southern Lebanon.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe wants to revise his country's war-renouncing constitution as part of his plan to improve its defense capabilities. Abe said he hoped it would foster a new spirit in Japan and that he would seek a new constitution within his term. He suggested that his administration would take the interim steps of reinterpreting the existing constitution to more rapidly achieve this goal. The Japanese constitution bans the country from maintaining a military, although it has been interpreted as allowing armed forces purely for defense purposes. Abe also vowed to fortify the U.S.-Japan security alliance. During his first official meeting with George Bush at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Hanoi this weekend, Japan passed special laws to allow its armed forces to support military action in Afghanistan and Iraq, in which they were allowed to operate only in non-combative zones. The Bush administration has backed the notion of a more aggressive Japan.
United States, China, and Saudi Arabia rank among the world's worst countries in dealing with climate change. A report says that the country's dependence on fossil fuels, along with a short-sighted energy policy, earned them a place at or near the bottom of the survey of 56 industrialized or industrializing nations. The United States, the world's leading polluter, ranked 53 in the annual study by Germanwatch, a German environmental group released on the sidelines of a UN climate change conference. Saudi Arabia placed dead last, while China fell from 29 on last year's list to 54. The survey is based on an evaluation of greenhouse gas emissions and climate policy. The United States has refused to accept mandatory cuts of the emissions blamed for the Earth's rising temperatures and is constantly rated poorly on environmental policy matters. Saudi Arabia was chided for its poor national and international climate policy and energy inefficiency. And China, the world's number two polluter, fell so significantly because of its growing dependence on carbon-intensive electricity generation to fuel its growing economy. This from the AFP.
Northern Hemisphere fishing nations have obstructed an effort to regulate deep-sea fishing and bottom trawling over a vast area of the South Pacific. The European Union, Russia, and South Korea sank a bottom trawling projection plan at a meeting to establish the South Pacific's Regional Fisheries Management Organization in Hobart last week. The talks in Hobart were a continuation of negotiations that began in Wellington in February. They aimed to develop a regional fisheries agreement to manage non-highly migratory fish stocks on the high seas from the Indian Ocean to South America and from the Antarctic to an as-yet undecided northern boundary. The talks aimed also to set up interim measures to manage effects of bottom trawling in these areas. But the EU, Russia, and South Korea repeatedly blocked proposals supported by Australia, New Zealand, Chile, Pacific Island states, and the United States, which were intended to protect deep-sea life from bottom trawling. This from Environmental News Service.
Birds are suffering the escalating effects of climate change in every part of the planet. A new report by the global conservation group World Wildlife Federation reveals a trend toward a major bird extinction due to global warming. The researchers found declines of up to 90% in some bird populations, as well as total and unprecedented reproductive failure in others. They estimate that bird extinction rates could be as high as 38% in Europe and 72% in northeastern Australia if global warming levels exceed 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The report, Bird Species and Climate Change, the Global Status Report, reviews more than 200 scientific articles on birds in every continent to build up a global picture of climate change impacts. The report identifies groups of birds at high risk from climate change: migratory, mountain, island, and wetland birds, Arctic and Antarctic birds, and seabirds.
About a dozen armed men attacked a southern Nigeria oil field facility today. 11 men attacked the Oporama station to try to shut down the facility, which is owned by a subsidiary of Dutch Royal Shell. Two of the men were killed during the attack and one was captured. Attacks on such facilities are increasingly common in oil-rich Nigeria, where most people live in abject poverty despite tens of billions of dollars made by the government in oil revenues every year.
This has been the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, November 15th, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Brian Smith. Our engineer is Steve. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Martha Odom.
And I'm Brian Smith. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR.
If you would like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email at amnews@kbu.org. Portland area weather calls for rain with temperatures in the mid-50s.